Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Oh, there we go, we're live, we're live.
Any shat all over the floor? Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Here after an epic weekend of Gallagher Premiership Final, England versus Barbarians game, French Pro 14 quarterfinal knockouts and all sorts of other stuff in between. So thank you very much for joining us here in the Rugby Dungeon. I'm Tim, that's JB.
Hello, Timothy.
Caught you just mid tea swig there. Yep. And Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Who's sporting a wonderful Egg Chasers match fit Akuma jersey.
Oh, goodness me, it looks nice, that.
Lovely fit, isn't it?
I don't think you can get the match fit Akuma jersey anymore.
Really? It was a limited run.
It's a limited run, I think. But it's going to exchange for the polo shirt.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you can get a new line. Mm. New line of wear for perfect, just in time for the summer. Get your Egg Chasers polo shirt, just in time for the Negroni party.
Exactly.
Details for which will be coming later this week.
What do you wear your shirt for? Birthdays?
Birthdays, funerals, weddings.
Bar mitzvahs.
Bar mitzvahs?
Yeah. I mean, all of the above.
You know what, I'd love a bow tie in those colours.
Oh, a bow tie in these colours and a matching pocket square.
I want a pocket square, yeah.
Would you do BT Sport work? And that should be your thing, Tim. Because everyone's got BT Sport, they're all very well dressed, okay? But the thing is, you're all a little bit identical, aren't you? Like, it's shirt, casual, and then a jacket. But I think you want to sort of up your game. I think you want to be known for bow ties.
Bow ties.
Bow ties. Every game, a different bow tie.
I don't know if I've got that in me.
Yeah, I'm not sure you want to be that guy.
I think you want to be that guy.
Do you know what I have sort of become? Martin Bayfield aside, who's always sticks to shoes, but I seem to be one of the few people on the BT Sport team that always goes with shoes.
You should always wear shoes. I have no time for jackets and trainers. No time. Well, except when Craig Doyle does it, in which case it looks great.
He can kind of, yeah.
Yeah, but he's different, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's different.
Yeah.
He's not a mortal like us. He's very cool.
So you're not going to be rocking the Augustine Pichot look anytime soon?
Yes, I can't do it.
Yeah, I'm definitely not cool enough to pull that off.
Yeah, I've got to stay.
I'm not sure even Augustine Pichot is cool enough to pull that off.
I know the thing which you can do to make it your own. You should wear a different club tie every week. Someone else's club tie every week. That's what I would do.
That's a good idea.
That's an astounding idea. I mean,
we've got multiple gifts of club ties, actually. We've got some great ones while we're in Madrid.
It'd be cool if you turned
very
on
very kind listeners
the Friday night game and there's Cocker doing his thing. I mean, obviously you have to tie the tie around your wrist so everyone knows that you were wearing it. But it's the Aylesbury club tie or the Colwyn Bay club tie.
Or the Bayonne Bombers club tie.
Bayonne Bombers, of course.
That's not a bad that I could maybe get on board with. There is a cameraman, Bull.
Yeah,
He wears socks. For game with one cameraman, you might notice it because you sometimes see him on some wide shots. You'll see him running up and down the touchline, and he wears one sock of each team.
Do you know what? I saw him the other week, and he wears a hat, that funny hat thing as well. Yeah. I could not work out why he had two socks on, but now it all makes sense. What a great idea. Yeah. I love that.
I don't know if I want to say the next bit about the socks. But I think there may be a reason why he puts one sock on one side and one sock on the other.
Ooh.
I don't know.
We'll find out.
I've been trying to crack a code. I'll get back to you on that one. Anyway, you know where you can. Where can you go and get a polo shirt?
Okay. We were selling shirts. Sorry about that.
I've just checked. Unless you've got some more information, the semi fit or the pro fit is in stock.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
The
you
Pro Fit, the long sleeve classic fit, and the men's and ladies, men's
due
and women's polo shirts.
They've obviously put it back in production.
They're all in stock. That you can get them from akumashops.com/eggchasers. That's akumashops.com/eggchasers.
Wonderful.
Well done, you. Wonderful. Well done.
Right, we're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter and everywhere else on social media. Hit subscribe on that feed, because whereas a lot of people will go quiet from this point on, we will continue to bring you podcasts single week, 52 weeks a year.
352 weeks a year.
Listen, it's 53 weeks a year.
Yes.
8 days a week.
Yeah.
We're always here. 25 hours every day.
At least 25 hours per day.
Yes. And I should probably get my excuses in early. I've carried you boys through some hungover Sundays before, and you're going to have to do that with me today.
Excellent. Well, can talk about your hangover later, actually.
Yeah, a lot to talk about there.
Yeah. But we should start at Twickenham. And congratulations to Saracens. What was your, be honest, what was your overriding feeling on the final whistle after the Premiership final?
Kind of. It's a mixed feeling, okay? So, being completely objective, the best final I've seen. Maybe the best final I've seen since I've been doing this podcast, frankly.
It's certainly one of the highest scoring finals I've seen.
Oh, it's the best during the lifetime of the pod. Possibly Leicester Northampton would have run it close.
Yeah, maybe. But no, actually, I don't think that one is as high a standard as this.
The standard was incredible.
Was exceptional. I was gutted. I was gutted for Exeter. It's a privilege to watch the game, but I just really, really wanted Exeter to win it.
I was gutted for Exeter. I hugely, hugely admire both teams. So I'm as a total neutral in this, I'm happy for Saracens that they won, but I'm devastated for Exeter because they played so well for long periods. From about 25 minutes through to 60 minutes, they were in control. And there's few teams that can disrupt Saracens in the way that they did for such a long period of time.
I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it in a second. Saracens are just so awesome. And it's not because they're awesome all the time. They're just awesome when it needs to happen. And when Slade went over, I thought, that is it. Game, set, match. You cannot win this now. It's over. No. They had like, was it 5 minutes, 10 minutes of just sheer awesomeness?
They scored those three. After that Slade try,
21 unanswered points.
Yeah. They scored three tries.
And they did it against.
I was going to say, yeah, exactly. So Leinster, they were 10 points down, 20 unanswered points.
Yeah.
Exeter, they were 11 points down, 21 unanswered points.
Yeah.
Exactly as you say, when they need to, they can turn it on. And it's only in retrospect, when you think back, I think Henry Slade, as he scored that try, the way he celebrated, I think he thought,
It's done.
We've kind of cracked this nut. We've done. They would never have been so naive as to think they didn't need to do any more, obviously. But I do think that they thought that they'd done enough at that point.
Momentum had been with them for so long at that point. Momentum had been with them from the debuters try after about 20 minutes through to the Slade try via the Johnny Hill try. They'd had all the territory, all the possession for such a long period of time. And that put them, 11 points up. You would forgive them for thinking, look, this is ours to lose now.
Yeah.
But they'd solved the Saracens' problem. So, a few things. First half, Saracens' tackling, I felt, was woeful, which is not something you say about Saracens, but they were getting beaten up. They weren't getting beaten up. They were having their tackles broken left, right and centre.
They were. They slipped off a number of tackles.
So many.
A number of tackles. Itoji, there was three or four occasions, and it was actually where he was going for the big shots and putting the big shoulder in. He did it on Devoto, he did it on Noel. He puts the big shoulder in, but Devoto, Noel and others managed to like stand their ground, spin.
Pinball on,
and go, yeah. Noel was phenomenal.
Noel was amazing.
He was. That is a bad injury.
There's one thing I did notice. There was one point I was watching the game and I was behind the set of posts that Exeter were defending in the first half. And after about half an hour, I was looking at the Saracens front five. They were gassed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will Skelton was there was one point where he did like a it looked like an old lady on a power walk trying to get back into the defensive line, and I thought and it was for that reason when they were 11 points up and I'd seen how gassed the Saracens front five were, and I thought Exeter have an international front row to bring on and Saracens have got three youngsters to bring on. Actually, I thought, wow, Exeter are going to do this, but
so, they actually brought just on that point. They actually brought Wollstonecroft on for Skelton, and he ended up
back row.
Playing back row.
Yeah.
That's how stretched the Saracens team were.
Yeah. Okay, so there is an element of Exeter losing this rather than Saracens winning it, which sounds bizarre. First half, anyone a Star Trek fan here?
No.
Reluctantly. Reluctant Star Trek fan?
No, but I'm aware of their work.
Yeah, all right. So, there is one particular episode of Star Trek, Next Generation, when they're fighting the Borg. And the way that they beat the Borg, right?
I'm so glad we got a Borg reference in.
Yeah, is by modulating their shield frequency. Carry on doing something different over and over again. And that's exactly what Exeter were doing, which is why they were able to cross the Saracens line so often. They were using Noel and his like little slippery feet. They were using Armand and Ewers, who were carrying like monsters. And then occasionally they'd do his little pop passes. So they're beating Saracens in multiple ways.
And Nick White was keeping them honest around the fringes.
Yeah.
Nick White.
Massive moment when he went off because the Exeter's momentum completely changed at that point.
So I think if you look at, say, the way Leinster approached Saracens, they were like, right, we're going to get over the line. We're going to beat you up. We're just going to do one thing really well. Well, Exeter did loads of things really, really well, and that's why they managed to get over the game line. As that game progressed and they got less and less confident, they stopped doing all these different things.
You're right.
And that's when they just got caught and couldn't get over the game line.
I think it was a lot of things happened all at once. It was they went 11 points up, and I think a lot of things happened at once. Saracens turned it on in lots of different ways. They were getting knackered. Maybe they started to defend a lead rather than go for the jugular. Yep. But I think I do think that Nick White replacement was a big moment. Had they had Will Chudley on the bench still?
Chudders.
And another replacement.
Yeah.
So Noel Steenson.
Yes, right.
Simmons drops to 15.
Yeah.
That was exploited for the Williams try, the Farrell cross kick. So I think those two injuries, it does change the complexion of that back line.
Yeah.
Saracens are beatable, providing you do lots of different things incredibly well all of the time in a random order, right? Which is not, there's a saying, isn't there? Simple isn't easy, okay? Well, that doesn't apply to Saracens. You've got to beat them with the most complex way possible and be perfect. Complex is not easy. And you know, fair play to Exeter. I mean, they were that close.
They really were.
They could just have stuck to it. I think. Went into shells.
I was thinking about this. I watched the game back today, this afternoon, and I was thinking about, so Cordero, I would have loved to see Cordero either
was he injured?
So he's been
back
injured,
training.
Been injured for a while. So Ali Eakin mentioned in comms that he wasn't quite 100% fit, but I read something midweek that said he was in contention for selection, but obviously because O'Flaherty and Cuthbert were actually both played really well in the semi-final. It's hard to drop them. But had he come in, he could have offered something similar to Noel, but different again, because he's even more stepping electric. But had he been on the bench instead of Sam Hill as your outside back replacement, he could have offered something that was more similar to Noel. And again, that it's such fine margins. It might not have made any difference, but it could have allowed you to Exeter to continue doing what had worked so successfully for them for such a long period of time.
You were talking about the bench, Tim, and you're saying, well, there's a bunch of internationals coming for Exeter, Saracens are stretched a bit. It was almost like, they were stretched, but they had the international quality where they needed the international quality. So, when you move Henry Slade onto the wing, that's not an international, you're not having an international quality winger or centre then. You'll change it completely.
Agreed, totally.
And I tell you what really summed this up. Crossfield kick, Owen Farrell, it's going high in the air, and covering over is a really good club-level fly half converted to fullback against one of the world's greatest
fullbacks. Fullback/wingers.
And you can just tell the difference. Talk about playing to your strengths. Hoist it up. Yep. Liam Williams looks like he's levitating.
Yep. Yeah. And try. Jamie George said that 11 points down under the post, they said Owen Farrell grabbed the team by the scruff of the neck. Yeah. And at that point, it's like he just turned winner mode on. It's like he just sort of like pressed the button on the back of his neck or something, like winner mode activated. And Owen Farrell, just that guy is incredible. And in that last 15, 20 minutes, when I was sort of watching the game, but I had one ear on the TV that was in the little room behind me, and the names I kept hearing were George, Farrell, Itoje. Yeah. Those three. And for England as well, I was getting excited by what happened and hearing those, because those three are world class.
Okay, so I've got a few things on that one. First of all, the England team. Why is it not Saracens and then fill in the gap with Exeter players?
Do you know, it's so weird. I had this exact conversation last night and Ali Eakin suggested the same thing. He went, just for a second, he said, just think about it. Exactly what was it? He said, Eddie could. He said, Eddie could pick Saracens and then you would have Mako, Jamie George, and you just need a tight head.
Harry Williams,
perfect.
Two locks, fine, yeah, got him. Yeah. Got him.
Ormond and Ewers with Billy.
Yes.
Can they do heavy carrying?
Or...
Well, one of them can.
Or Billy
Kvesvik.
Jackson Ray.
Kvesvik. You can make a back.
Ray, or Simmons, who's come back fit now.
So yeah. you can have five Saracens forwards, supplement it with three others.
Yeah.
Because you could even just put Tom Curry as a seven, whatever. Yeah.
You've got your scrum all sorted.
You can have five. Yeah. Scrum, nine, Spencer, Farrell, Barrett. You could do Lozovsky or Slade. Slade. What?
Yeah, pick out of those four centres.
And Goode at fullback. And you just need a tighter prop, a flanker and two wingers. Well, and you could have the Saracens team.
Yeah.
Well, wingers. Woodburn and Null. I mean, Woodburn on his form last year.
How are you not massively at the races with that team? Why are you wasting your time?
But I mean well, if you're opening it up outside of Saracens, you could look wider than that and if you wanted.
Yeah,
but the point being, you could legitimately... I would pay massive money to see Saracens versus New Zealand. I think that would be an incredible game of rugby, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah. So this is part of the problem for Eddie, actually, because the problem for Eddie is not that he's not got talent. He has actually...
He's an inferior coach. That's his problem.
His problem is he's got way, way too much talent. So you saw on the Sunday, an England kids team. So this is, as I read that team, as we went through it last week, it's players who are unlikely to make the 46 or 50 man training squad for the World Cup.
Yeah,
it's people out. So you're into your 50th to 60th best.
Your fifth and sixth team.
Yeah. It is. It is really your fifth and sixth team, and they played phenomenally well against what is a very, very experienced Barbarian team with multiple, like tens or possibly even hundreds more international caps than that England team had.
I would be, if it wasn't so much money with a contract extension, I'd be very tempted to say, look, Eddie, it's just not working. Let's be absolutely
brutally
honest.
You've been saying that for 3 years.
Yeah, I've been saying this for 3 years now, Eddie. It's just not working. Mark McCall's going to come on sabbatical. He's going to take all the Saracens with him and he can pick a few extra players. And we're going to tell him he's not allowed to pick anyone else. You're not wasting your time.
So no Sippers?
Nope.
No Marcus Smith?
Nope.
No Tom Curry?
Nope. No one. You're going to go from those two teams. Okay, you're not bringing in some Leicester losers.
You can have Elliot Daly, though, technically, can't you?
Nope.
Jack Singleton, you could have.
None of them.
Because they're coming in.
Oh, hang on.
Because they're on the way in.
No, they're not. No. I've made my decision. It's as arbitrary as the playing in France rule. And there you go. Just go and win a World Cup. You've got all the things that you possibly need now. Go and win it. They would. I'm sure they would.
On your point about Farrell. So I thought he had a brilliant game. Mm. I thought he had a really, really good game. Actually, his weakest part of his whole game...
Tackling.
Kicking at sticks.
And it was a problem last week as well.
He missed three kickoffs. So there's two conversions.
And one was very important.
And one penalty. The penalty, which would have put them 6 points ahead. But thankfully for Owen Farrell and Saracen, they scored a try from the kind of subsequent passage of play.
Let me ask you a question, okay? This is sort of going on a tangent. Who is the biggest ball-carrying lock in the world?
Brodie Retallick.
Retallick, Etzebeth.
Okay. Who's the best in the line-out? Best lock in the world? Like my out time.
Marrow could be up there. Whitelock could be up there, maybe. I don't know. I'm not a probably technical lineout operator.
I don't really know that.
Okay, what about biggest tackling lock?
As in biggest hits.
Biggest hits.
Best Courtney best. Laws.
Courtney yeah. Laws, all right. Hits the most breakdowns?
Alan Wynn.
Alan Wynn, yeah.
All right, okay. I'm not saying Mario's not world-class for a second, all right? But I was just having this thought the other day. I thought, like, Mario is obviously a hell of a player. Why has he never come up in the conversation as the best at any one particular thing? What is it that he's really good at?
Everything.
Everything.
Do you think he'll be defined by being, like, really good, like, the top three in everything rather than the best at something?
Do you know anyone who has that conversation so esoteric that you're judging locks not by who is the best lock in the world, because Mara would come up in every single conversation.
Yeah, that's
but
interesting.
Who's the best in?
Yeah, because this is like having one of those pro evolution or FIFA soccer thing where everyone has scores out of 100.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And you're going, well, he's only got 9 for everything.
Yeah, it is.
And 10 for a couple
is
of things.
Is Mara top trump 9 in everything? What is he 10 at?
Well, no, he could still be 10, but there might be someone who's also 10 and might be a smidge better.
So I would say he is a 10 at one thing, which is doing things which locks don't really do very much of, which are these. I'll give you an example. Like against New Zealand, when he just looks at a situation and can do things that no other lock can do. Like, oh, look, there's the ball coming down from line-out. I'll sprint through that line-out, I'll catch the ball before it hits the scrum half's hands. Or when a scrum half's about to go and pick up the ball, he goes, oh, yeah, I'll just leave this line and I'll get that scrum half ASAP. I think that's what he's amazing at, doing things which no other locks actually even think of.
Mm. I would agree, he is amazing at that. He is also very good at... So his tackling today wasn't great, but generally tackling is very good. He's always, the last 3 or 4 years, he's been top 5 in the Premiership for turnovers, which is difficult for lock, and considering he doesn't play every game, is incredibly impressive. So and also, he's phenomenally athletic. Do you remember the game, I'm sure it was Champions Cup against Lyon.
Oh, 40 metres out.
He pinched
the ball and gassed it. Yeah,
basically on the halfway line.
Flew in.
And then just glides in.
Yeah.
How many other locks in the world could do that?
Yeah.
Not many that I can think.
Yeah. No, he's a crazy specimen.
James Phillips.
James Phillips.
Who's your shout for lock of the season?
James Phillips, yeah.
Yeah.
Good question. Five.
Question.
I'll just say one thing. If there is one thing Mauro Itoje can improve, it's when you get a really good referee... Like Wayne Barnes, he is liable to get pinged.
And he got yellow cards in both finals.
And he got quite a few penalties against him as well. Yeah. So that's something he can address and can improve on.
Agreed. Question for you.
Yep.
There's one player from both squads today, both of the 23s, who has played every single round of the Premiership action this year. Who was it?
Do you know Jackson Ray? Nope. I don't know this.
Jackson Ray would be the one I'd go for.
Skelton?
Nope.
Spencer?
Nope.
Lazowski?
Nope.
Crikey, I don't know.
Well, hold on a minute, hold on. Barrington?
Nope.
Cock?
Nope.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a Saracen, I'll give you that.
Oh, sorry, there's one in each of the 23s.
Cruz?
There's one between the two 23s.
Cruz?
No.
England.
Oh, of course.
Barrett's been injured for the last quarter of the season.
Well, we've nearly named the whole side.
You're
Maitland.
No, again, internationals.
Strettle.
No.
Wasn't playing.
He was on the bench.
No, he was on the bench.
Hang on. We're not going to...
Wigglesworth, I said him, didn't I?
No. I don't think you did, but no, not Wigglesworth.
No. Go on, just tell us before it gets embarrassing.
Tompkins.
Nick Tompkins.
I would never have got that. We would have gone for a long time.
By the way,
that.
How did Brad Barrett get on that pitch?
Mm.
How do you hurt a hamstring... And 6 days later, you're playing.
Hero.
Or 7 days later. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Phenomenal. He did. So he came off. Was it half time he came off?
Yeah, 29 minutes.
Was it 29 minutes?
Yeah,
sorry.
29 minutes into a game with a hamstring.
It does raise questions for me as to, was it the best thing to do? Would you have been better to start Tompkins and have someone else on the bench?
No, I think you start your injured player because you could...
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, you yeah. don't bring, you definitely don't bring.
Don't bring him off the bench.
No, no, but have someone else on the bench.
Hmm.
Oh, well.
So I mentioned Mara got on the wrong side of a few decisions. One decision, and good teams are very good at infringing in the right way at the right time, cleverly. And I thought there was one really, really key moment in this game, just before half-time. Exeter got 3 points from a kick. right in front of the posts from a scrum, but that scrum happened because they were held up over the line. When you actually look back, Alex Good was so offside.
Oh, was he?
He didn't get picked up, really. he was stood comfortably a yard in front of the line when the extra player picked up.
Was it? Because it was the post. Was it you was picking up to go left?
You was picking up to go left of the post. Good was so offside. It should have been penalty try.
Wow.
But like, it was a big moment. But great teams.
Cheating Saracens.
Richie McCaw was the best. He was able to play it really well, and Alex Good did too.
Well, so that, because I remember thinking, how the hell has Good stopped Dave Ewers there?
Yep.
How on earth has he stopped him?
By being a yard offside.
By being completely illegal. Well, Good actually made two very good tackles, because he made a tackle on Henry Slade 2 yards out from the line. I was certain
would
be
point,
a try.
Who really thinks Alex Good is not capable of playing international rugby for England? It just seems so absurd now that he is not the number one fullback and should have been for the last 3 years, frankly.
Well, it's systems. Eddie just wants gas in his fullback.
You want to play Mike Brown so often.
But he doesn't anymore.
He's been playing Elliot Daly, that's why.
And Marcus and Anthony Watson will jump ahead of him. Jack Noel will be his third option at fullback.
There'll be plenty of time, I guess, to slate England before the World Cup, I guess. So
yeah.
So that, we'll save it for that.
That penalty was interesting, because that was the only time that Exeter, the Chiefs, went for the sticks.
And I think Rob Baxter mentioned after the game, you know, in hindsight, maybe we should have carried on doing what we were doing and gone for seven.
Interesting, because it was already 41 minutes. So as soon as there was any stoppage for anything other than a penalty, it was game over.
Mm.
So I liked that call.
I did.
The point I was actually going to make was, so it was 5 tries each. It was three conversions each. It was 2 penalties to 1 to Saracens.
Wow.
So it was that fine margins that had Exeter at another time kick sticks, they could have drawn. Now, admittedly, that does assume that the Sam Hill try in the 81st minute would have still happened had the scores been closer. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it shows how fine the margins are.
I've been keeping an eye on the Saracens Instagram channel. Yes. So a little impromptu rugby social. This is on Mac Over Napola's Instagram. Which Saracens, which member of the Saracens back three is having such a good time that they're singing along to the Magic FM jingle on the Uber radio?
330 milliliter bottles exclude Scotland. Drink aware.
No idea.
There's only three of them, isn't there? Which one?
Which one of who, sorry?
Which one of the Saracens back three?
Oh, back three.
Good.
No, Maitland.
It was Great Mates.
Great Mates.
Singing along to the...
Gotta be Mates.
Alex Good and which Saracens player recreated a scene from the movie Twin Town by having a bath together after the game?
I'm a big communal bath fan.
Yeah, in baths that are way too small to be communal baths.
Yeah, that's what they were doing.
Goody.
There's a very good reason. So if you know the film Twin Town, then you'll sort of have a clue as to who it would
be. Jamie George?
No.
So is it two big, tall boys?
No. Twin Town is, give it away, so just have a guess. It'll give it away. Just doesn't matter. Just pick someone.
Lazowski.
No. Twin Town's a movie, Reece Ifans, and it's that one set at Bonnie Mine Rugby Club, the two Welsh lads. So it was Sanjay Willis, Liam Williams.
Oh,
have you not? Do you remember this scene?
Nope.
Against triangular flanks.
No,
I've never seen the film.
Off. It's in the book. Oh, come on, 10 fucking seconds.
Sorry. Anyway, it's a funny film, Twin Town. Sorry, I picked a particularly sweary bit. It's just these two stoner lads from Swansea, brothers, twins. And the antics they get into. Sounds I'm horrendous. Surprised as a Welshman you've not seen it, Jay.
Yeah, I'm not Welsh in that sense.
What song did Maru Itoje sing on the bus on the ride home from Twickenham to St Albans yesterday? Was it The Lion Sleeps Tonight, Circle of Life, or Hakuna Matata? They all had to do a bit of karaoke.
Lion Sleeps Tonight.
Hakuna Matata.
JB gets that one.
Have that.
And Maru Itoje felt the wrath of Saracens coach Adam Powell because was it that he wouldn't drink his drink, wouldn't let him get past to go to the bathroom, or wouldn't order a taxi?
Wouldn't drink his drink.
was blocking him from the bathroom.
JB wins.
Come on, mate. We've all been there.
And finally, it was lovely to see Jacques Berger on a bit of a session yesterday with Moritz Botha, Ernst Hubert, Parra, Petrus Duplessis, Will Fraser, Hugh Vivian, loads of these sort of Saracens alumni were all on a bender together. It was great. So Jacques Berger was in the area.
Amazing.
Yeah, he was in
amazing.
England. Yeah.
I was going to say something really, really important then. But it's
Love Island starts.
No, it wasn't that. Oh, yeah.
Jack Noel injury.
No, not that.
Can we talk about Jack Noel for a minute after you've mentioned your point?
Something amazing, which is Owen Farrell has defeated the curse of Dre Beats.
Beats by Dre. We always back ourselves at home.
Yeah, so obviously we spoke about this last week. We always back ourselves at home. Chris Robshaw fell foul of Dre Beats. Anthony Joshua has fallen foul of Dre Beats.
Yeah.
But luckily, Owen Farrell, maybe this is a good omen, has actually gone against the grain and defeated the curse of Beats by Dre, or Dre Beats, or whatever it is. So congratulations.
Congratulations, Owen. And Owen, along with a load of those Saracens boys, now have 4 Premiership titles and 3 European titles in 5 years.
That's
dynasty. This is dynasty territory. Is this the best club side we've ever seen? Is this better than the Leicester double-double team?
Yeah, I think it is.
Was it the Wasps double European champions?
I think it is for this reason, which is I think Wasps were beating up teams which were not as good as the rest of the Premiership. Wasps were a fantastic team. They did very, very well. But they never had the competition like Saracens did. They were never pushed as hard as Exeter pushed Saracens. And as Leinster have pushed Saracens. I mean,
Leinster's the one I would refer to. As competition this year and last year when they beat Saracens, but also for the dynasty. Johnny Sexton has got 3 titles himself.
Mm.
I would say Leinster are the only ones. I'm not sure they were a better 15, say, than one of the incarnations of Leinster. They might have been the best club team of all time. But I think maybe as an organisation over the last 5 years, it might be a bit better. But it's not much. I mean, you make an argument either way. But it's one of those two. And I don't think there's anyone else, maybe in the history of professionalism, who was as good as those two teams.
And they do remind me of New England Patriots as well, because they were always there or thereabouts, but they weren't the best team between September and December, January.
Yeah.
But they've just been getting better and better and
they've
better.
Done it. When they beat Bath in the final, they finished 4th. Didn't they?
Yeah, that's right.
So they've got that. And they've built it up, but they've got that final experience. Because were it 4 years ago, or 5 years ago, or 6 years ago, when the players, you had some phenomenally talented players, but if they found themselves 11 points down against Exeter, or 10 points down against Leinster, teams with that little experience of the finals rugby would not have won those games.
Mm.
Yeah, completely agree. That's what I was going to say. Did you see Mark McCall not celebrating?
Yes. Well, he celebrates in his own way.
Yeah, in his own way. Like thinking, I've got to repeat this next year now. I mean, I think that's what he must... Do you see that clip?
I did see that clip. And also, in his post-match interview, Mark McCall said, quote, "I'm so lucky to work with this group." He is the most humble, magnanimous man...
He's brilliant.
...in sport. Let alone rugby, it's quite amazing. There are some DORs and bosses who, in their own brilliant way, like taking centre stage, like having the limelight.
It's an easy trick, though. Like, if you are in a really good team, the easiest thing in the world is to say, "Oh, I'm so lucky, I'm so blessed," but, you know, and deflect away.
It's authentic. You know, it's authentic. Yeah. This is 10 years now.
I mean, I kind of think.
Do you think you would do that?
No. I would say it in public. I'd say, yeah,
you'd be uplifting the trophy. You'd have one hand on the trophy with the captain.
I've heard you talk about your coaching ability, and I've also seen you coach.
An outstanding coach. I'd be more in the Bougelat mould, I would say, rather than the Mark McCall mould. And they've both won European Cups.
Absolutely, although Bougelat does... He does more coaching than he should, but he's not a coach.
Hey, tell you what, for a non-coaching coach, Bougelat's done all right. I mean, considering that he's got no experience in coaching, he's won 3 cups. That's quite impressive.
Well, I think we should just acknowledge, but just make it clear to, as you're listening, just make it clear to you that we are parking to one side any asterisks over this when the when the results of whatever inquiry or investigation into Saracens is being done is done. We should just enjoy this team and what they've achieved, especially when you look at how many of that side that have won another double, second double in 3 years, won that with guys that have been there since they were kids.
Completely agree. Yeah. Completely agree. There was the co-investments. Until you can give me any proof that the co-investments have made a shred of difference to anything, you've got to wait until the end of the inquiry.
We don't know what that is, but yeah.
One thing. I know I've mentioned Noel before already on this pod, but I just wanted to say, what a phenomenal performance by Noel.
So good.
Well, him and Devoto, actually.
Devoto played very well. But Noel, the strength of the boy, to keep taking those hits and spinning and keep making the yards. He only made 54 metres with ball in hand.
Is that it?
But it was the yak. It was the yard after contact.
He was playing like number eight.
He was king of the pick and go, as he calls himself.
Don't disagree with him.
There you go. There's talk about Sippers being a potential third scrum half. If you want to have versatility, drop a number eight out of the squad as long as you've got Jack Noel in it.
Yeah.
Perfect. Hopefully he's fit. Please, don't be too bad an injury.
So it looked really bad.
It looked horrible. Particularly when... So the way this works, just to let you know how the sausage is made a little bit, there'll be a director and there'll be people talking in the broadcast truck. And when it's a really bad injury, quite often someone has a look at the replay and they go, don't replay it.
Yeah.
Because it's not fair to the player and not the sort of thing you want to see at home. So they just say, don't play it. So when I saw that they hadn't replayed the Jack Noel thing, I thought, oh God, someone's had a look and it's horrendous.
Yeah.
They did end up replaying it.
And he walked off.
And he walked off.
It's where he kind of went backwards.
Yeah.
So horrible. The walk off doesn't necessarily mean that nothing bad has happened. Or like bad, I mean, nothing really, really serious that would keep him out for 4 or 5 months out of the World Cup.
Didn't it look to you like he was getting up on his feet and trying to see how he could do it? Can I jog this off?
It did actually look like, could I play? No. These players like Noel, pretty much every player in that game, just like Brad Barrett, they would do anything to keep playing in games like that.
Yeah.
Now, enough of this game, because I've spoke about it. I want to know two things. I want to know, did you and Goody have a pint race?
And if you don't understand the context of that, Andy Goody and myself were working on the BT Sports stage in the West car park, which was absolutely packed. The last 4 years, the final has been incredible weather. Bearing in mind, it wasn't great on Friday and it wasn't great on Sunday.
Yeah.
It was scorching again. So just next year, just get to the Premiership final, which is in the middle of June next year. So, we didn't have a pint race.
Is it in the middle of June?
Yeah, because everything kicks off later because of the...
Yeah. We didn't have a pint race, but I did get asked and I did oblige dusting that off at the BT Sport rap party.
So you went later out on after the Premiership final?
Yeah. After.
Are you allowed to say where you went?
Went to somewhere in Richmond by the river. It's lovely. We had our own little area. It was good.
Any impressive post-match performances? You allowed to say?
Well, I think I can say. I don't think he'd mind. Austin Healey was on amazing form. He is he's a sight to behold when he's in full flow, as he was on a rugby pitch.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And when he's doing his analysis, he is one of the best when he's in form.
He is, and he was highly entertaining. He was he was trying to make sure everyone else had a great night, so he was trying to instigate getting some shots and stuff. But for whatever reason, the kind of people that had the details of the tab would not give it to Austin. So he took it upon himself to just go and basically he was all I remember. My main memory of the night, and it deteriorated quite quickly after this, was every now and again Austin Healey coming round and pouring something in my mouth out of a bottle.
How the other half live, eh?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Amazing. Who was out, did you say?
Everyone.
Everyone?
Yeah. Everyone was working the game, which was basically everyone.
Which was everyone. Oh,
well, not everyone. Not everyone. Nick Mullins was in bloody...
He was in Roland Garros.
I know. And it was noticeable.
Well, this, hey, the season changing next year means Nick Mullins will be available for the final, I guess, because it'll be in that little post-Paris, pre-Wimbledon window.
Oh, nice.
It makes a big difference, that's what I'm saying. It makes a big difference to my viewing pleasure. Not that anyone else is bad, just, yeah, you know, there is certain things that I expect.
Yeah, he was great. Rolling ball of barbed wire and such. The little dumper truck.
Yeah, stucky little dumper truck.
JB, are you excited? The other thing you're excited about, Love Island?
Yes, I am, actually. Well, am I? I don't know. I wonder if...
I kind of feel dirty. I enjoy it. And then by about week five, I sort of hate myself a little bit.
Yeah, I'm wondering dirty. If, like, with all the mental health hysteria and the vetting, which has gone picking these Love Island contestants, are we just going to have a bunch of very stable people? And it seems to be, actually, looking at the preview for it, no, we're not. It looks like they've managed to find some amazingly shallow and narcissistic people like they have most years. So I'm really looking forward to it.
What rugby player would you most like to see walk into the Love Island villa?
But we've done this before, haven't we?
Did we talk about this last year?
Yeah, so
yeah, we might have done.
The problem with the men, a lot of the men that go in there are, well, I'm going to say, they're all not effeminate in a way. Yeah, effeminate, I'd say. Like shave the legs, so on and so forth.
Groomed.
That's
yeah, their eyebrows always just... Oh, I find their eyebrows disconcerting.
And fake tan.
The men on Love Island's eyebrows. And also that they're quite often like cut and muscular in that sense, but they're not muscular. They're defined.
Yeah, they're not.
So
like,
actually they're still there's no depth to them. Like you see a professional rugby player, there's like depth.
Yeah.
Or Phil. Or Phil.
They won't be deadlifting anytime soon.
No. That's what you're trying to say. Exactly. They know their way around a barbell curl, stood in a squat rack, while proper people who like to do proper weights stand and get annoyed waiting for them to finish.
So there's two questions going on here, really, isn't there? Who would most fit into the Love Island villa, and who would I like to see in the Love Island villa? And they're two very different.
Okay.
So I'd quite like to see someone fairly miserable and big. Ooh, Gethin Jenkins. Ideal. Like, Gethin Jenkins would make a wonderful contestant. Maybe a James Phillips?
James Phillips.
Like a real gnarly.
Yeah. Anyone who wears any lock or tight head could easily go in.
What about a Georgian tight head?
The guy who plays for Claremont.
Kirikashvili.
Yes, there we go. What a word. And also, it'd be better if he doesn't speak a word of English.
Yeah. Yeah. Just eats all of the food, and then when they're doing their little posing workouts, he just goes and deadlifts
everything. Yeah. So everything. Like every single weight, every single plate in the gym is used by him all the time.
As a combo, that Exeter centre partnership of Sam Hill and Henry Slade, they do very well.
Oh my word, Henry.
Sam Hill's a very handsome gent as well.
Yeah, I mean Henry Slade in there, he looks like a fitness model. I mean, by the way. He was standing next to Farrell in the final. I thought, bloody hell, he's massive. Because Farrell's a big boy, isn't he? White shoulders, in shape. Henry Slade's every bit the size that he is now.
Yeah, yeah.
That sort of happened overnight.
He's a big, strong boy.
Yeah, so, Henry Slade could actually go in there as one of those Instagrammy type ones. But I tell you what, why don't we merge both worlds of gnarly, doesn't really speak English, forward, and also someone who looks like an Instagram type model. Sergio Parise.
Man,
imagine how inferior you'd feel.
Yeah. the any bravado would just shrivel out of those other men in the villa. Yeah,
exactly.
Francois Houhard would be a good shout.
Yeah, he would fit in too well, actually.
He would be too yeah.
What was the other one? JJ Engelbrecht.
Yeah.
Most handsome man in rugby.
I think Slade might currently be. Oh no, Slade or Victor Vito. My two most handsome men.
Victor Vito
is.
So, I mean, the question is, Tim, are you going to do a Love Island podcast this year?
Mate, I just cannot commit to that.
I can't either.
I cannot commit to that. It was, God, how did we do that?
Every night.
Every bloody night.
It was tyranny. Absolute tyranny.
Yeah. No, I can't. Let's
see how episode one goes. Let's see how outraged I am by the end of episode one.
I mean, if there'd be a demand to chuck a once a week Love Island pod on our Egg Chasers channel,
no way are we doing that. We are not polluting the thing we've cultivated for 5 years. We're not throwing that away.
Yeah, I think we've already spoken about it far too much.
Yes, agreed.
Well, not enough
on this episode.
Okay, on this episode.
On this episode, fine.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, well, something equally as ridiculous as Love Island, the Barbarians were playing England.
They were. And this was... I was not expecting the performance from the England team that we got. I was very pleasantly surprised. I alluded to it earlier. That England team was seriously young, seriously inexperienced. There's boys in that team who've only got a handful of Premiership appearances, and they played bloody well.
They did, didn't they?
They played really well.
Mark Atkinson played very well. 2 tries.
Yeah.
Hat-trick, he gets signed by Sale and gets fast-tracked to England. So it's a shame for him that he missed out on that last one.
He did play well for the Barbars. From the England team, I thought Dom Brandt was brilliant. And Curry.
I mean...
Bench Curry was sensational.
Okay, yeah, so... Okay, you've given me loads of things to talk about now. Number one, Ben Curry.
Bench Curry.
Do not know what Eddie Jones is looking at when he watches Ben Curry.
Bench Curry, sorry.
Too similar. He's already got a guy in his squad that does what he does.
But, like, not according to him. I mean, according to Eddie Jones, these two, Tom Curry and Ben Curry, are night and day. Yeah,
it is odd, especially when they first appeared in a squad together, when they went to Argentina, was it?
Yeah.
Named in the squad to start was Ben Curry, yeah. And Tom Curry was on the bench.
Now, the people that know... Yes. The Curry boys the best, right? Are at Sale Sharks. And Ben Curry is Sale Sharks Player of the Year.
Player of the Year.
So, like, what Eddie Jones is seeing when he's like, oh, yeah, maybe he should be a scrum half, tongue-in-cheek. I just don't get it.
I just would not read anything into what Eddie Jones says in press conferences.
No, but this wasn't in a press conference.
Or to the media.
Okay.
Unless it's a one-on-one conversation with Eddie Jones and Steve Borthwick, I would just not pay any credence, because anyone can see that the two Curries are identical.
Yes.
Identical capabilities.
Yeah. So, I mean, there might be shades here or there, but
Curry will not, he will have only done his England chances a huge boost.
Yeah.
And this, remember, this, as I said before, the way I'm looking at this team is a handful of these guys have got a shot at being in the
wider training squad.
40 to 50 man training squad. These are guys who are not expected to be in that squad.
That's exactly what I was going to say next.
You might have a few of these guys that are potentially England fourth 15ers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rather than fifth or sixth.
Okay, yes, so correct. The interesting one here is, of course, Cipriani, who did not play because he might be involved in things later on. They pulled them back.
Yeah.
Dom Brandt's got, he's got to have a shout. He has to have a shout.
He's got to be in the training camp.
Yeah, have a look at him.
Because he was brilliant. And it's, with Dom Brandt, what really impresses me is, so his power, his size, his physicality and his power really impressed me. But then you look, some of his offloading, some of his handling is lovely. Some of his support line, his support lines, he gets to be as powerful and effective as he is because he runs intelligent support lines and intelligent running lines. I thought he was very, very good. Every time I watched him, he's impressed.
And every time you say that, I cannot quite believe this is his first season as a professional.
Yeah.
And
the one thing, you look at his rig, he's much better than he was. He's still got a bit of strength and conditioning to do. But he's considering the frame on the boy, when he does get a good off-season period to properly train and properly condition himself, God, he's going to be dangerous.
I'd like Eddie to take him in the training squad, I think.
Absolutely.
It is a case of, though, who do you leave out? Well, is it? Because... If you look at the
carriers, it is Cocker's Law. You can't say he should be in without saying who you drop.
Although it's the last squad was 31 man, the training squad is going to be, let's just say, between 40 and 50 men.
Yeah.
So there
and is, if it's 50 men, make it 51 men so you can take him.
Yeah.
But if you wanted Ben Curry in your World Cup squad, who would you drop?
I don't know, because I really want Sam Underhill in my team as well. I mean, I want a mixture between... It's not so much that I think he should play. It annoys me, the perception that he is so much worse than his brother, when it just clearly is not the case. That's the thing which annoys me more. So I'm actually happy with England's sevens if they are fit and firing, being a mixture of Tom Curry and Sam Underhill. I think they are two of the most wonderful sevens, you know, certainly in the country.
Well, in terms of durability, there's no doubt how good Sam Underhill can be, but in terms of durability, I think that's where his question mark comes in. And is he a liability taking him to a World Cup when you've got seven games and you're only going to have five back row players? So you're going to need someone who's going to be fit and available for five or six of them to be able to.
It's a worry, isn't it? Mm. It's such a worry.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone can get injured, I guess.
Again, we've got lots of time to talk about that. Other guys that were impressive, Marchant.
Marchant, his feet and acceleration were brilliant. And this was the kind of open game that suits Marchant.
He's had an amazing season, though. 11 tries in the Premiership, and he's been outstanding start to finish.
Yeah. And Smith. Smith is excellent.
Magic Marcus.
The two halfbacks, actually, Alex Mitchell really impressed me. I thought those two were excellent.
Yeah. Smith, not quite good enough to start in the World Cup yet, but getting there.
I mean, this is a great example. He is the fourth choice fly half for England. I think pretty comfortable to say that. But it would take monstrous injuries or some unbelievable drop in form for the three guys above him
We would have been saying that left. About Stephen Donald.
Hang on a minute.
12 years ago.
I don't see it quite like you guys see it. I see it more like a pyramid, right? Which is number one nailed on. In Eddie's mind, probably rightly so now, is Owen Farrell. Owen Farrell goes down and it is a lottery who gets in next.
I think George Ford gets in next.
You really think?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Well, no, actually, you're probably right.
In Eddie's mind.
And he's had a brilliant season. He's had a brilliant season.
He has played very well bad team.
Yeah.
A very bad team.
I don't know. Look,
he's managed to have a great season in a terrible team.
He nearly got relegated.
Yeah. No. He's had a great season in a terrible team.
He's made the leader.
He kept what would have been a mid-table championship team. He kept them in the Premiership.
And I would contend that Gloucester would have done no worse if they just traded Cipriani and Ford.
Yeah.
No.
I'm with that, actually.
So, if you've got all three of them, all right, you've got the heir apparent Smith, who is probably below the other two. You've got Sippers, who I guess you're going to have to reinvent. He's going to want to do what he wants to do. Yeah, maybe Ford does come in because it just makes more sense because he's more...
Ford will fit into the system that you've got. Ford will do anything to be playing in that team and he would fit in the system.
I still go with Cipriani, then Ford. But it's not as clear.
Oh, yeah, well, I didn't say, in my comment, I didn't say Ford is better than Cipriani. I said Gloucester would have done no worse with Ford at 10, if you swap the 10s. That's all I said, which is basically saying they're both exceptional.
And in my mind, in Eddie's mind, Ford's second place. Yeah. I believe Eddie thinks that.
The Oldham connection, those boys love each other, don't they?
It's true. In my mind, it's not so clear. I think there's a clear number one, and the number two is a bit of a bun fight. One does shade it. I'd go Sippers then.
It's very big of you to admit that Owen Farrell is clear number one.
Well, he is in Eddie's mind, not in my mind. We think very, very differently.
It is interesting that Cipriani, the word is, could be third choice fly half and third choice scrum half.
Nonsense.
Yeah.
I can't see that happening.
Third choice fullback.
Here's a question, right? So I was mulling this over. There's not an English scrum half, is there, that plays any other position than scrum half? Does that make sense? So, like a lot of French.
Like, who hard could play on the wing or Parra can play 10.
Piri Weepu played 10.
He did. Like, Merceron and Gaultier used to swap around all the time. They used to, like, whoever's closest to the breakdown would then be the 9 and the other one would be the 10.
The Glasgow scrum half slash winger. What's his name? The Fijian boy.
Matawalu.
Yeah.
That's a little different.
Nicol Matawalu.
Yeah, he's a little different to most other scrum halves.
He is. England don't have a scrum half like him, it's fair to say.
But I can't think of anyone in the England, around the England setup that can do anything else other than scrum half.
That is often a criticism of England and the English setup, that it creates people who are, referring to David Epstein's new book, Range.
Mm-hmm. David Epp seemed good. Econ Talk.
Yeah.
I listened to that.
It's an amazing podcast.
On the recommendation of one of our listeners.
But that's talking about specialists and generalists.
Specialists and generalists,
England generally, forgive the loose word, but generally England creates specialists rather than generalists. Rather than like a Matt Gitto or...
I was going to say Australia are the classics, aren't they? Where their back lines are just...
interchangeable. They're like Rhys Hodge, who can play 12, 13, wing or 15.
And that's all about having... And that's 15. All about having the generic understanding and the basic skills and being able to apply that to different contexts and different positions. Like that amazing understanding. And England's players are more regimented and don't have that... change the context and they don't have that same understanding.
Not only can I not think of a single nine that can play in any other position in England, I can't think of a single other back that can play nine. Unless you can fill in the blank for me there.
So we mentioned a few, the French have a long history of it, and we've mentioned a couple of anomalies, like Houhard and Matawalu are anomalies. Yep. Can you think of any others? I know Pienaar would be one.
Pienaar, I tell you, in a World Cup game...
Can you mention a New Zealand one other than Piriwipu?
No, but I can mention a Welsh one. I mean, didn't happen on purpose, but didn't Gareth Davis score a try to knock England out of the World Cup on the wing?
Wasn't it
I don't remember that game.
Williams.
Or was it Allard? It was one of the scrum offs.
It was, but that was only...
And that was forced.
That was That was like Henry Slade going to the wing.
The only England player I can think of off the top of my head who I know has played 10, who's a scrum half, is Sam Harrison for Leicester. And I'm not sure. Is he in the conversation, Sam Harrison? Not that I know of.
No.
Not that I know of. So, that's it, really.
None of the New Zealand boys do, really, do they?
Yeah, let's think of those.
But when you look generally at, say, Australia is a great example. Well, and New Zealand as well. Tamua... Beale, James O'Connor, Australia always produce these guys who can play 10, 12, 13, 15.
And I wonder if it's because I've come from rugby league. It's like we've got these amazing players. Do you know who they remind me of? They remind me of the guys with skill set of Kyle Eastman, who for the longest time didn't have a position and then finally settled down at 12. So that's probably it. They've probably got amazing rugby players.
We could get this conversation to Sam Burgess quite easily.
Teetering on the edge of Sam Burgess.
Again, so they're going to have to take a rugby league nine. It's Hooker. This leads quite nicely on to a conundrum for Wales, okay? So Rhys Webb was playing today and, he played well. I'm not sure he played well enough to turn enough heads in Wales to say, we should rip up the whole Welsh regional contract system to get Rhys Webb in, because the same problem applies. Nines only play nine.
It is interesting, that one, isn't it? Because, apparently Will Skelton has said no to Australia, even if they made it so that he could play.
Really?
Will Skelton said no. But apparently...
What about the cash?
Because Mark McCall, after last week's game, he was quoted as saying... They want all their players to play internationally. They want them to achieve the highest honours. And so if to do that, he would have to take a short or long-term Super Rugby contract. Saracens wouldn't stand in his way.
Yeah, well, I think it was in the rugby paper today where Will Skelton is... there we go. Skelton says no to World Cup. Will Skelton set to turn down the chance of going to the World Cup to see out his two-year deal with European champion Saracens. The ARU approached him to see if he'd be available.
It depends what they want, because if they want him to play to sign a 2-year Super Rugby contract, that is a much bigger commitment than just saying, we'll sign you on a 6-month Super Rugby contract, come and play this 1 year and then go back to Europe.
I guess that's maybe more what they might be talking about, because, and going back to what you were saying about Rhys Webb, if you'd, as say Josh Adams, for example, probably would have been able to get more money at a club in England than, or France or wherever, than having to go to a Welsh region to further his international ambition. And you would be pretty cheesed off if the rules were bent for a player after you'd been forced to move to one of only three clubs.
A player who's on mega money at Toulon as well.
Yeah.
It honestly doesn't say a lot, does it, about how much you... value your domestic rugby if you're willing just to dish out 6-month contracts to people to get them in the national team. makes a mockery of, you know, you stay here so our national, our regional teams or our national club teams can grow and get fans and be established, and then you just bring in a guy for 6 months who might not even play for you because that's not why he's there. So I don't like that idea. There is definitely an element of being more flexible around international times. And also, you've got to remember, like, international money is massive for these players. Massive. If you look at what the average guy is on in the Premiership...
Well, for it's massive for England. I don't know what other nations are.
Like, you know, so, say Josh Adams. I guarantee you his international money will have doubled what he earned at Worcester, if not even more. I mean, it is a big, big deal for these
players. Yeah, he wouldn't be on a massive contract at Worcester. Yeah. Because he didn't come in on a big contract. He didn't come in as the name he is now. His contract now, if he were to re-sign in England, would be much bigger than what he was.
And there's a bunch of these boys up and down the Premiership who are not on mega money, but if they get that international call-up, it makes a world of difference. So, yeah, they should all play in international rugby as soon as they get the chance. But I'm not sure, you know, bringing in a guy for 6 months to the Waratahs sends the right message to the Waratahs, all the players established there. Same if they went to, there's talk about Reece Webb going on loan or signing for a Welsh team. What does that tell Thomas, is it Williams?
Yeah.
Yeah, Thomas Williams and Gareth Davis.
Two things I say to my kids all the time, choices and consequences.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the same, Reece Webb, you've got, there's choices and there's consequences.
You go get €500,000 a week, or a month even.
Go and earn all that cash. The consequence is this, and I kind of agree. Having drawn the lines, you can't blur the lines. Despite many people, Welshmen, I understand why they're saying, "Oh, we should just change the rules for this."
Yeah, and even
like there'll be unintended consequences, and I would be thoroughly pissed off if I was a Welshman who'd signed for a region.
They definitely shouldn't change the rules. If Reece Webb or the WRU were smart about it, they could have looked at doing something like Bernard Foley's done, like a load of the South African boys have done, like Dan Carter in the past did, which is right into your next WRU contract, a planned sabbatical, go and play 1 year at Toulon, mid-World Cup cycle, mega money for that 1 year.
Oh, yeah, that's a good shout.
That's where...
And you come back a better player, that's the other thing.
Yeah, you get different experience, so that's where
you can make a business case as the WRU, can't you?
I say you come back a better player. I mean,
maybe not in Toulon. Not this incarnation
anywhere,
of
like
Toulon.
Paris. I mean, I can't remember.
You get a good suntan. Like vitamin D. Vitamin D deficiency.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, say, you know, you're a local lad, grew up in like Llanelli. You take your rugby super, super serious. You're in relatively good condition, and then they let you loose in Paris and they feed you pate. Yeah, I can't. Maybe you don't come back a better player. Go to Saracens for a year.
Well, you could do that.
Yeah,
you could do Saracens. Yeah. So on that, the overindulging in France. Did either of you see the Rupeni Thao Thao documentary?
I haven't watched it yet.
Not yet.
It is brilliant. It is a brilliant bit of work. Dan Leo, the Pacific
Rugby
Players
Welfare.
Pacific Rugby Welfare. It's available on YouTube. We retweeted it at Rugby Podcast from our Twitter account. It's a 12-14 minute little documentary talking through a bit of the history around what happened with Rupeni Thao Thao. It is a phenomenal bit of filmmaking, it's such a sad story because he was so phenomenally talented, but from such an isolated part of the world that when he went to New Zealand as a 18-year-old, he didn't speak English, so he had to learn English then to be able to play for them. When he got his first paycheck, he spent it to build a house for his village back in Fiji, and then kind of 12 months, 18 months after that, playing for Northland and then Blues.
Spoiler alert, by the way. I know, I'm joking.
He goes to New Zealand not speaking English. He then, because he's just so electric, he gets picked up by Agen in France, goes to France, barely speaking English, definitely not speaking France. He's not seen anything like this in the world. He grew up in this tiny little village of a dozen houses in a tiny little part of Fiji. It's a phenomenal film. It's a phenomenal story. And the work that Dan Leo and the Pacific Rugby Welfare, the work that they're doing to try and prevent stories like that, because it was basically now he has got no money. For whatever reason, for multiple different reasons probably, he wasted all of the the money or does no longer have the money. Well,
I mean, just I would like to say, I don't mean to derail from the Rupeni Thalthal story by saying this, but because it is such a you're right, and the bits I've read and seen about some of him stories of people like him and other people from Fiji, Tonga, Samoa, is it's alien to us. It's completely alien to us. So for that reason, I would really love to add the context to the whole Folau debate by, I would love to have an explanation of where he's come from and what life is like back in Tonga in the community he came from. Because I think there's a lot of context here that we don't see.
Well, to tie us all up, I've been fortunate enough to interview Damiel. You can go and look at that interview on Rugby Dungeon. And I've spoken to him multiple times since, like if I need a bit of information, particularly say around the Folau incident. You know, Dan Leo would be someone that I text and you know, see if he's available for. I can honestly say, if more people behaved, acted, and spoke like Dan Leo, it'd be a far, far better world.
He's an impressive bloke.
Yeah, I've seldom spoke to, like Phil says, a more impressive guy. I mean,
And doing the right things or seeking to do the right things with the right motivation behind it as well.
Yeah, completely agree.
Yeah.
So go and watch that
video. You will not regret it.
You mentioned Argen in France. Did you see any of the top 14 quarterfinal knockout games?
I heard about them, but I've not watched them.
So I watched the first half of the Racing La Rochelle game, and Racing was the worst discipline I've ever seen a team in that half. They were a disgrace around the ruck area, and they just kept on infringing. Which led to Chavancy, I think it was, got a yellow card. For it was probably the 10th ruck penalty of the half. He comes in from the side, takes out the 9. The 9's not got his hands on the ball. And that's the 10th penalty. They were already 12 nil down at that stage.
The most French thing about this fixture, this is the most French thing in club rugby. Do you notice where it was being played?
It was not in the...
No, at their old stadium.
Yeah.
Because the Defence Arena, or La Défense Arena, was double booked for a pop concert.
Wow.
And then they went and lost to La Rochelle. Get your basics Someone's getting fired.
Money well spent.
Someone's getting fired for that.
Get your basics right. Racing 92.
Goodness me. Do you know what? If you come in from the side of the ruck and tackle a scrum half, that, to me, is on par with showing up to training drunk. That is, I write that down, and I find you a week's wages. I mean, that's how dimly I look at that sort of decision.
It was monumentally stupid. But that was just par for the course for Racing in that first half. They just, everyone was doing it. They could not, and they kept getting pinged for it, and they just didn't learn. It was insane.
Yeah. So as a result, Racing 92 are out. La Rochelle go ahead to the semi-finals, and in the other semi-final, it was Lyon, Carl Fern's Lyon, who beat Montpellier at home. 21-16.
Carl Fern wasn't here for this game.
No, 21-16.
Do you know where he was?
Madrid,
of course.
Oh, he's in Madrid. A big Liverpool fan. Grew up in Liverpool. Grew up in Liverpool. Carl Fern's.
Yeah.
That was a dreadful game.
Wasn't it awful? I mean, not only was it awful, I mean, I was kind of looking forward to it. I turned it on, watched a bit of it. And it's the coverage that gets me. The coverage is just so awful. They give away a penalty.
I mean, BT Sport, it was outstanding. In fact, I will just defend one other thing, because you mentioned the Rupeni Thalthal thing. Yeah. The no-filter stuff that BT Sport do is out of this world good.
I've not seen it yet.
So they started it with boxing, and they've started doing it with football and rugby. And if you have a chance, go and have a look at the no-filter on the BT Sport rugby Twitter feed, because there will be some popping up. But basically, it gets you into dressing rooms, into training grounds. It has shots of the game and it from in the crowd. It's so incredibly well put together. You should definitely check it out. The no filter stuff is brilliant. BT Sport doing game changing stuff once again. Go ahead with your coverage point.
Not the coverage per se. It's more the analysis. That's what I meant to say. So they give away a penalty in the first 30 seconds. What do you think the analysis was of that penalty? He'll be disappointed with giving away that penalty. Oh, thanks. I would never have guessed that. I would never have guessed that is not the perfect way to start. I know it's aimed at a certain... Football coverage is aimed at a certain crowd. But why do they need to tell us this?
Anyway. Well, that's a bit patronising to that football crowd. I think actually... No. I think you're right to call that out, and they deserve better than that. I thought that... I liked Andrew Neil on the coverage.
Political commentator Andrew Neil.
Yeah, political commentator Andrew Neil.
Okay.
He's so good, so much value on Twitter. What did he say? I'm just looking for it now. He tweets a lot. You have to scroll right down his...
One of our listeners writes his jokes on...
This week,
yeah.
We've got some influential listeners. By the way, the Negroni influence is... It's reaching fever pitch. I've never seen so many Negroni about now.
Hey, and it's the 100th year. It's a centenary year of the Negroni.
Negroni.
Is it?
Yeah. Premium Brand sent me a bit of information about the Negroni, which I'll read out at some point.
And did they also send you some gin, Campari and sweet red vermouth?
I'll have a look. Might be somewhere.
I can't find the tweet. He tweets too much. I can't find the tweet. But
hey, boys, I'm a little bit of a loss now because we have nothing to preview. This is the point where we switch into preview mode. What are we going to do?
There's some Super Rugby games.
Not interesting.
No.
You're not interested that beloved Jaguars...
Oh, here he goes. Andrew Neil says, so some team goes ahead in the first minute on a dodgy penalty, then for the next 85 minutes, so far, nothing happens. This is the beautiful game. Thank God for cricket and rugby. Proper sport.
Very true.
The contrast between the quality of the two finals, both shown on BT Sport on the Saturday, significant contrast.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah,
it was a two-hour build-up for that as well. It was a two-hour build-up for the football.
Well, if you're a scouts from Madrid, it's not like an eight-hour build-up. So,
yeah,
you know.
Your beloved Jaguars, JB, are topping the South African Conference in Super Rugby.
All right, 2019. Let's do our predictions then, and give it exactly the same attention as we give, say, Pro 14 predictions.
Go on. What are the fixtures this weekend?
Let's pretend that we know about it.
Okay, we've got Highlanders hosting the Bulls.
Bulls.
Oh, those Highlanders and those pesky Bulls. Yeah. I'll go for Bulls.
Give me the light blues. That's what they're called, right? That's what the fans call them.
Yes. I'm sure they do.
Okay.
Highlanders to win at home. Reds. Reds against the Blues.
Plucky Reds.
Suncorp Brisbane.
Plucky Reds against those defiant Blues.
Reds who lost to the Jaguares at home.
Yeah, I know.
This weekend.
I quite like the way that the people of Queensland vote, so I'm going to go Queensland Reds, please.
I'll go the Reds at home as well.
Blues, who are third bottom in the table at the moment.
Yeah, I know. You don't need to tell me and JB that. We know.
Then we've got the Crusaders hosting the Rebels.
Oh, those Saders are going to...
Crusaders minus Todd Blackadder are always
There's not going to be any probably not going to be any breakdancing this year, though.
No.
Well,
why?
Crusaders are top of the table.
I know, they're top, so there could still be some breakdancing this year.
Well, it's either going to be some breakdancing or no breakdancing.
Exactly.
I think it's fair to say. Crusaders, please.
There's still a chance of some breakdancing. Now, did either of you see the Curtis Rona tackle?
London Irish, soon to be London Irish's Curtis Rona.
Using inverted commas for tackle on Marika Korobeti.
Nope.
This weekend. So, it was the best opportunity you could possibly think of to use the new World Rugby tackle height
flow chart,
because it was so easy to use and get a yellow card outcome. It took like 2 seconds to follow it through. And just a penalty was given.
It was
five, and it should have actually been a yellow card and a penalty try, but just a penalty, no penalty try was given. It was a phenomenally dangerous, forceful sling shoulder charge.
Let the boys play. You know how like NFL quarterbacks have the plays on their forearm?
Yes.
Like in a sort of, what's it called, laminated thing on their.
That's what I do for lineup callers, by the way.
Well, I think that's what refs will have with the flow chart on. They'll just pop it open and for the new World Rugby flow chart.
Six.
Yeah.
High tackles. Do you know what would be cool is put the flow chart next, so you split screen it and you have the incident and you have the flow chart and it highlights as they go along.
But you could have the player is like a little icon, the player. So it was, let's say it was Curtis Rona. You have a little mini Curtis Rona at the start of the flow chart and he moves.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. He moves
just
to
his
yes
head
or no.
Ding,
like a,
ding,
like
ding,
a little
ding
animated computer game type
yeah
thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like imagine Super Mario World or Super Mario Brothers 3 where you have little Mario moving around the map.
Yeah.
You do it exactly,
and
like
all
that.
The opposition fans are going, oh, and they're about to cheer, and all the home fans are about to boo. Oh, that's a you've got some juice at BT Sport.
Yes, well, consider it done.
Next game, Waratahs Brumbies.
Waratahs Brumbies.
Oh, I think those tars at home.
Tell you what,
Brumbies are top in the Australasian.
I know, but
never right off either of these teams in a derby, presumably.
This will go down. This will go down in history as a game that happened this weekend. Yeah.
It happened on the 8th of June, 2019. We've also got, this is a repeat of a final from a couple of years ago.
It was, when the Lions used to have good players.
Lions, yeah.
Johan Ackerman was at the Lions game at the weekend just gone.
Until Gloucester and Sale Sharks stole all of their players.
That's right.
Lions hosting the Hurricanes, my beloved Hurricanes.
I think the Canes.
Does Ross Cronier still play for the Lions?
The scrum half?
Yeah.
I think so.
Elton Yanchis?
Yes.
Give me the Hurricanes.
Canes.
Hurricanes. We've also got the Stormers and the Sunwolves.
Now, so, how are the Sunwolves getting on? Because this is quite a nice story for a while.
They had a few good wins.
And then?
And then they are currently bottom. I say a few, I've just looked it up. They've had two good wins. They've had two wins.
Are they staying a team or are they folding or
no,
something?
No, they've gone.
They've been kicked out.
They're out of here.
Yeah.
Going back to 14, are they not? Yeah, it's going to 14 teams, I think.
Yeah. It's interesting that, I think it was Phil Kearns got a lot of flack this week for suggesting.
It's not fair. It's not fair. Jaguars are a national team. It's not fair.
He wasn't complaining when they were losing every game. When they were playing experimental teams.
And it's like, oh, the penny's just dropped, 4 years in?
Yeah, what was he expecting?
Just worked it out.
Who do you think was going to play for the Jaguars?
They've got one team.
Yeah, an amazing short-sighted rant there.
Jaguars, they are playing very, very well.
41 points, hell.
So Stormers are going to beat the Sunwolves in Cape Town, and then the Jaguars are hosting the Sharks in Buenos Aires, which is an interesting little battle, because Sharks are second top in the South African Conference. Sharks have been playing well.
And that's a nice time as well.
20-9. Oh, I might watch some of this weekend. I might watch that game.
Actually, I know what. I'll be in Munich, so no.
Yeah, we 20-9 in Munich or 20-10 in Munich.
Yeah, good luck finding Jaguars.
You're a stag do, aren't you?
Yes, we are.
One of our, this may be one you've heard of, but I know in the past we've talked about drinking games and stag do games, and loads of people have taken some of the ideas we've shared. Well, I met and was bought a drink by one of our listeners, James, Saracens fan.
James, who does the Twitter account?
Twitter account.
He does the Saracens
Twitter account.
I don't think so. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I don't think so. But this James, he said, the South Africa Saracens thing has been going for decades, years and years and years, because his grandfather played for Saracens and came over from South Africa.
That is interesting.
But anyway, so he bought me a beer, and he was saying that the game that they play, they have a yellow jersey.
Okay.
Whoever wins a pint race, I don't know how they start it, but someone starts and they have the yellow jersey. So say, because I've got a rapid pint, I'll be the yellow jersey.
Oh, beat the best.
Yeah. And you bring a drink up and challenge someone else.
So as long as you buy a drink, you can challenge the yellow jersey at any time.
Yeah. So
you could do
with it being Tour de France season. That could be a little stag do thing.
That I quite like that, because you could also do the. So you'd have the sprint, which could be racing a bottle, say.
Oh, yeah.
Different stages.
Yeah, and then you have the King of the Mountains, which would be like a 2-pint or a...
Oh, God.
Something, yeah.
Well, no, hang on.
But you have to do it.
King of the Mountains would be something different, wouldn't it? Be like, how much can you drink? More than having actual...
For anyone to hold the King of the Mountains.
Yeah. I mean, you've got like 3 minutes to get as much down you as you can. Rather than having a defined amount of volume,
nice.
You have a defined amount of time.
Yes.
I'm not condoning this in any way.
Yeah. Please drink responsibly.
Please drink responsibly, yes. Please.
But there you go. It was just a thought, because James said to pass it on as an idea.
Well, okay. So I will... we'll have this stag do discussion, then we'll wrap this up, because literally there's no more rugby to talk about.
Never mind. Anyway, go on. With your stag do thing, you were saying something.
Yes. So, the problem with stag do's now, because I've been on so many, I'm such a veteran, like, I've kind of run out of things to dress up as. And when you're dressing up, the majority of people are dressing up, not for the, basically for the benefit of other people. It's like, oh, aren't you zany? You are XYZ, to make people from outside the group laugh. I'm now thinking the best thing to do is to dress up for your own benefit, all right? or to make yourself stupid but not know about it. Does that make sense? So it's gone full circle for me. The one thing I would hate to dress up as, and this is the key for stag do, you've got to make everyone feel miserable. I would hate to go back to the days where you get your tour t-shirt, just something like a little polo shirt, and all have your nicknames.
A nickname, like, oh, fingers. On
yeah.
The back
yeah.
Of
yeah. No, yeah. No.
Player 69.
Yeah. Like, oh. If someone bought me one, I would dress up in a mankini over one of those shirts.
100%.
100%. 100%. And, do you know what would be even worse? Is them, and then maybe someone gets me some square toe faux leather shoes
with bootcut jeans.
Bootcut jeans.
A bit. I'd look like a rugby journalist on a stag do. So yeah, that's exact. Yeah, that would be the way. If I was gonna dress up a stag do, I'd make them wear that because it's horrendous.
We don't actually have any fancy dress this coming weekend, do we?
We do, but we don't know what it is. Secret.
Secret. Interesting.
Secret.
Yeah.
Tim. We did movie theme fancy dress at our stag do in Prague.
We did.
Did you go for your Michael J. Fox classic?
I didn't. I do have a movie grade Michael J. Fox costume at hand. I'll show you a picture. This is this might be my favourite ever fancy dress. I might put this on the at Ruby Podcast Twitter account.
That's quite impressive.
Oh, I've seen that picture. That's incredible, yeah.
Clockwork
That's
Orange.
Amazing.
A movie grade Clockwork
yeah.
Orange.
Yeah.
Foursome.
That was awesome.
Beautiful.
Very good. Well, unless anyone's got any other business, we should wrap this up and go.
Island team was announced. The island squad.
You're really trying to keep us there, aren't you?
Yeah, can we go?
Come on.
You're desperate to go.
Okay, I know about this because Will Addison is not in it.
No Will Addison. He's not played for a while. I think injury might be an issue.
No big surprises.
No Stuart McCloskey.
Dave Carney's in. Good.
Yeah, Dave Carney's a weird one. But Mike Haley and John Klein, the South African monster.
Mike Haley's in?
Mike Haley's in.
Wow.
It's the wider squad.
This is the 46-man squad. 44-man squad.
There's 13...
What are they going to do about their 7 problem?
Oh, yeah, because Sean O'Brien and Levy. Well, by the look of it, they'll probably end up putting Stander to 7. Or Omani to 7 and Stander to 6.
Oh God, they've got Omani.
Conan could do, but you got
and
Murphy,
Conan to 8,
and you got Van der Fleer.
Van der Fleer's playing well, so.
Yeah. They've got options there for a true 7.
Yeah, but it's the first and second choice.
Yeah,
it's not good. But yeah. There'll be 13 players called from that. But we can get into all that with the World Cup warm up games.
There will be autumn internationals. It's just as part
a
of World the
World
Cup.
When are the Rugby World Cup warm ups?
From about the 10th, 11th of August, they
start.
Well,
in 3 weeks' time, it starts with training camps.
So the England won't start in 3 weeks' time because they've got the mandated 5 weeks' rest.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But the announcements will be...
No, no. Yes, hang on. There is some things going on here. So there is some controversy.
Now JB's carrying it on. Come on.
Yeah,
sorry. Go on.
There is some controversy about...
Get some carbs in his body. Some complex
fats. When you can start your training camps. So, for instance, Scotland training camp will start, I think, within the 5 week rest period. So then I'm not sure who has to pick up the tab for the rest. Does that make sense? So do they rest on, for instance, at Saracen's time for Sean Maitland? So Sean Maitland will have to go into Saracen's Scotland camp in the next few weeks.
So basically, when has Eddie Jones got the Octagon UFC training camp for his England squad organised? Yeah. When's that?
The ankle breaker.
Yeah, the ankle breaker, yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what Eddie Jones, what you know, bit, like a tough mudder, but with extra barbed wire or something. You know,
it's 11,000 volt HV cables rather than a little shot.
Yeah, if 2% of you aren't dying, you've not done it properly. So there is some controversy as to when the players can go, particularly if you play in the Premiership and, say, Scotland, or you're playing for Scotland or Wales. Interesting.
One final thing, which I will bookmark this for a future podcast, we can talk about it, but a legend we've talked about many times on the podcast, Blair Paddy-Maine, founding member of the SAS, could be the subject of a TV show.
Oh, really?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, there's people that are looking to write a TV show based on the founding members of the SAS, and one of the characters that they might centre the whole thing around is the Irish and British and Irish Lions international Blair Paddy-Maine, who was, as we've talked about many times on the podcast, was an unbelievable character.
That would be a cracking show.
Yeah.
Who's doing it? HBO?
I think it might be Netflix. It might be the people behind Peaky Blinders.
Right, enough yes. of this nonsense.
And we can bookmark that another time. You know where to find us. And this week, I understood I was at Twickenham HQ, and I made sure, I went to look at the room we'll be doing,
a
light Negroni party in, JB 2020. I went to have a look at all that. So we should have all the I's dotted and T's crossed, and we should have information on our live show, Negroni Party World Cup warm-up show, and all the details of that. So keep an eye on the Twitter feed at Rugby Podcast. Make sure you hit subscribe on this channel. And let the boys play.
The boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.